min Herre, o min Herre, dette er en lampe som er tent av din kjærlighetsild, og som brenner med den flamme, som er tent i din barmhjertighetstre. O min Herre, øk dens glød, varme og flamme med den ild som er tent i din manifestasjons Sinai. Sannelig, du er den bestyrkende, den hjelpende, den mektige, den gavmilde, den kjærlige.
O Bože, učiň mne učitelem své věci. Dej mi mrtům promlouvat o moudrosti svých cest. Učiň mne moudrým, laskavým, dobrým a chápajícím. Obdař mne odvahou mučeníků, trpělivostí svatých a věděním svých vyvolených. Nechť stanu se ohněm, jenž prozáří temnotu lidské nevědomosti, praporem volajícím nad lidskou slabostí a písní, jejíž melodie a ozvěna přehluší lidskou beznaději. Milovaný Otče, nemám, co dal bych za tyto nesčetné dary, než lásku tak velikou, že hrozí vedvím neroztrhnouti. Miluji tě z nejzazšího koutku své duše. Prosím tě o nezměrnou laskavost, se kterou mi dovoluješ, abych ti sloužil. Vím, nebeský Otče, že každému výkřiku mého srdce, jenž slova pojmout ti nemohou, porozumíš. Slovy už více vyjádřit nemohu. Abdu'l-Bahá.
O companion of my throne, hear no evil and see no evil. Abase not thyself, neither sigh and weep. Speak no evil, that thou mayst not hear it spoken unto thee. And magnify not the faults of others, that thine own faults may not appear great. And wish not the abasement of anyone, that thine own abasement be not exposed. Live then the days of thy life, that are less than a fleeting moment, with thy mind stainless, thy heart unsullied, thy thoughts pure, and thy nature sanctified, so that, free and content, thou mayest put away this mortal frame, and repair unto the mystic paradise, and abide in the eternal kingdom for evermore.
Chválo, Chodájo, Kábe Sofi, Čondor, Ata Farma, Ein Ein.
The hearts that yearn after thee, O my God, are burnt up with the fire of their longing for thee, and the eyes of them that love thee weep sore by reason of their crushing separation from thy court, and the voice of the lamentation of such as have set their hopes on thee hath gone forth throughout thy dominions. Thou hast thyself, O my God, protected them by thy sovereign might, both from extremities. But for the burning of their souls and the sighings of their hearts, they would be drowned in the midst of their tears, and but for the flood of their tears, they would be burnt up by the fire of their hearts and the heat of their souls. Methinks they are like the angels, which thou hast created of stone and of fire. Wilt thou, despite such vehement longing, O my God, debar them from thy presence, or drive them away, notwithstanding such fervor, from the door of thy mercy? All hope is ready to be extinguished in the hearts of thy chosen ones, O my God. Where are the breezes of thy grace? They are hemmed in on all sides by their enemies. Where are the ensigns of thy triumph, which thou didst promise in thy tablets? Thy glory is my witness. At each daybreak, they who love thee wake to find the cup of woe set before their faces, because they have believed in thee and acknowledged thy signs. Though I firmly believe that thou hast a greater compassion on them than they have on their own selves, though I recognize that thou hast afflicted them for no other purpose except to proclaim thy cause, and to enable them to ascend into the heaven of thine eternity, and the precincts of thy court, yet thou knowest full well the frailty of some of them, and art aware of their impatience in their sufferings. Help them, through thy strengthening grace, I beseech thee, O my God, to suffer patiently in their love for thee, and unveil to their eyes what thou hast decreed for them behind the tabernacle of thine unfailing protection, so that they may rush forward to meet what is preordained for them in thy path, and may vie in hasting after tribulation in their love towards thee. And if not, do thou then reveal the standards of thine ascendancy, and make them to be victorious over thine adversaries, that thy sovereignty may be manifested unto all the dwellers of thy realm, and the power of thy might demonstrated amidst thy creatures. Powerful art thou to do what thou willest. No God is there but thee, the omniscient, the all-wise. Make steadfast thou, O my God, thy servant who hath believed in thee to help thy cause, and keep him safe from all dangers in the stronghold of thy care and thy protection, both in this life and in the life which is to come. Thou verily rulest as thou pleasest. No God is there save thee, the ever-forgiving, the most generous.
O my God, O my God, unite the hearts of thy servants, and reveal to them thy great purpose. May they follow thy commandments and abide in thy law. Help them, O God, in their endeavor, and grant them strength to serve thee. O God, leave them not to themselves, but guide their steps by the light of thy knowledge, and cheer their hearts by thy love. Verily, thou art their helper and their Lord.
friends.
Now you thought that I am going to cry, yeah? No. No tears today. No one drop of, you say drop of tears? I don't know. Well, no one tear here. But I want to clarify something. Yesterday afternoon, I was not the only person that cried here. Everybody came to me, are you okay? Yeah, oh, of course I am okay. But, you know, my problem is because I'm here on the stage and everybody look at me. But what about you? I was looking this part, on the right part, everybody were crying. So, this is for clarification. The second one is, this is another announcement, very important, that in this week, we learn a lot of things, really, so many things. And we learn and we start an auxiliary universal language here. Do you know which means? No? No. I called Bahia language. That means, for the demonstration. What is that? What's that? Integration. And what is that? What is that? Did you see? So next year, if we are not better in English, we are very good in Bahia language. So thank you very much, Bahia Joe. Now we start with a very, very important section, that is the question, answer and question. And please, Mr. Nakhchavani.
Your questions have been typed to make it a little bit easy for us to read. There are 11 pages of questions, and there are 90 questions in all, and some are pretty long, you know, about 7-8 lines. We tried, a number of you helped a great deal last night to put these things together in some order. And I have asked Bahia to be here so that she will read the questions, so that I don't have to read as well as give some answer. Thank you very much. On the whole, I would say that there were a number of questions which were very, very good and showed that you are seriously interested in these subjects and you are exploring new aspects of the matters that we discussed together. But I was a little bit disappointed that there are some questions which were very superficial. There were some questions which we had already discussed here. Matters that are in your notes, very clearly stated, I thought, that are asked. Some of these questions, for example, here, this thing that, I don't know how many years ago it was that I was here, and this little booklet, Question Time, was prepared, and it's, I think, on sale. Many of the questions here have already been asked here and answered, and the booklet is here. And of course, there are all the books and all the literature that we have. So, you'll excuse me if some of the answers that I will give will be very, very brief, because of the time and because of the nature of the question. There were some questions which were purely private, personal, and really of no interest to the whole group. So these questions we will not read at all. And later during the day, you can contact me or Violette and ask these very, very personal questions if you wish. Okay, now we will start. I must also say that some of the questions will try to put two or three questions together because they are all related, especially the first three.
We know the beginning of the process of disintegration is the air. We know the beginning of the process of disintegration is the year 1844. How can we respond to people who argue that the evidence of disintegration, the decadent events in history, have been occurring from before 1844 and therefore don't accept the Baha'i view? Will destruction and integration, according to the idea given by the two lines, always coexist? Does this mean that also in the Baha'i civilization there will be destructive events? In these days we've been talking about the two processes of disintegration and integration. My question is, do they always coexist since the beginning of the human history? Or is this something that belongs only to the Baha'i cycle in order to establish the world order of Baha'u'llah? Why has New York City been chosen as
No.
Okay.
Yes. These three questions are very closely related, as you can see. Basically, this idea of integration and disintegration, of course, existed before 1844. It is, you think about the word disintegration, think of another word like decline, or another word like decay. Maybe decay would be a good way of thinking of these things. When you have in a forest or in a garden, you have certain branches that have fallen down, or even some of parts of a certain tree are decaying. This is what is happening in the world. It is because of the decay in the world, the decline in the world, that the prophets or the messengers appear. God sends them because the disintegrating process does exist before the arrival, the appearance of the manifestation of God. But what happens when a manifestation of God appears? He does not stop. His appearance does not stop the disintegration. His appearance accelerates the process of disintegration. Just as the sun, when it rises, if something is decayed, it dries it up. So it is accelerating, it is speeding up this whole process of decay, so that it will completely disappear. As to the question whether disintegration and integration have do exist in previous manifestations and previous dispensations. Yes, they do, and they will continue to be like this. This is a general principle that there is disintegration always in the world, but this term has not been used as such. This concept has not been clarified in the way it is, because it was localized, it was for a country, it was for a region. But because now we are talking about the whole planet, the whole civilized world, and the entire human nature, human race, this is why now it has become so dramatic. And so we express it in such ways that catch the imagination. But in essence, this is something that has always existed in the past and will continue to exist. The scale is different.
Why has New York City been chosen as the City of the Covenant? Can that, in a way, be considered as similar to Jesus Christ's choice of Rome for the center of Christianity? Shall we expect the crumbling of the American Empire?
Jesus Christ did not choose Rome. This developed like that. However, the reason why New York City has been called the City of the Covenant is because when Abdu'l-Bahá was in New York, he very clearly, to a group of very close American friends, particularly Juliet Thompson, he clearly he very clearly announced himself and declared his station, unveiled his station as center of the covenant. He made that very clear. This is why it became the City of the Covenant, because in the United States he was regarded as the son of Baha'u'llah, more or less a kind of a spiritual leader and so on, but the real meaning, the true meaning of his station was not clear until he himself disclosed it, unveiled it. And it was in New York City that he did this, and this is why it became the City of the Covenant. Personally, I don't think it has any relationship with the crumbling of the Roman Empire, or to think that anything like this is related to the situation that happened in New York with 9/11, or that something similar to that has to happen in Chicago, or in New York once again.
In last year's material, it is written that in the story of religions, conversion never happened by means of force, at least during the life of the manifestation. What is then the meaning of jihad mentioned in the Quran? Did Muhammad use violence to convert people?
You see, the question here about that coercion has never been used in past religions is in the writings of the Bab. If you read the writings of the Bab, that volume of the selections from the writings of the Bab, you find that there. And it's based on that that in last year's notes we included this point. What happened in Islam is, as explained by Abdu'l-Bahá in some answered questions, in the chapter entitled Muhammad, at the beginning of of the book, the campaigns engaged by Muhammad, military campaigns, were all defensive, not offensive. So jihad has two categories, two types. One is defensive, one is offensive. When the people of Mecca arose, and while he was peacefully settled in Medina, came to attack him and his followers and his family, this is when he started this idea of defensive jihad. It was after the passing of Muhammad, and particularly because of the lack of a center of covenant and strength of the covenant, that defensive jihad deteriorated and became offensive jihad. So that is the situation about the question of jihad. What the Bab says, that there is no coercion, this will continue to be throughout eternity. The manifestations of God come, it's the free choice of the individual to accept or to reject.
Is it true that Sheikh Effendi envisaged the state of Israel to further expand and gain even more territory over its neighboring countries?
You see, this is why I told you that if you get these CDs, you should not circulate them indiscriminately. For example, this question is being recorded now, and it will go around. So this is why you have to be careful. I have to give some answer to this, obviously. Whatever you have heard, my dear friend, is not in the writings, in the clear stated writings of Shoghi Effendi. Nothing. This is what some pilgrims have reported. Pilgrims' notes. They may have understood, they may have misunderstood what Shoghi Effendi said. Second point is that when the State of Israel was formed in 1948, you can check the messages of Shoghi Effendi, published messages. You will see that Shoghi Effendi at that time sent a message to the Baha'i world that the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948 was the fulfillment of the promise given to them in the Bible. This is what he has on record, which is in contradiction to what is being reported here as a pilgrim's note.
Are the religious courts destined to be established in Eastern countries meant to just be one function of the NSA-LSAs, or are they meant to be a separate institution? Then there is a second question related to religious courts. Could you please give us more information on the Baha'i religious courts in terms of their future function and jurisdiction? Are they going to be separated from the local and national assemblies, or are they? Will they be executing their function together with these assemblies?
The idea of establishing religious courts is that the assembly itself, whether local or national, will become a religious court on the local level or the national level. So, for example, as I explained to you about publishing trusts, the publishing trust is the National Spiritual Assembly, basically. But it establishes itself, reincorporates itself as the Baha'i Publishing Trust because it has a specific activity. It's the same thing here. The local assembly and the national assembly reincorporate themselves, are recognized by the civil authorities as courts, as religious courts. Now, this does not mean necessarily that these assemblies will actually deal with divorce cases, with disputes between individuals and so on. Of course, if it's a small community, they will do it. But when the community becomes large, and there are more believers, which means there will be more differences and more disputes and more divorces and more so on. So, already in the days of Shoghi Effendi, in Tehran, in Iran, because of the great number of Baha'is in the country and particularly in the city of Tehran. The local assembly of Tehran was obliged to have special committees, and these committees were more or less like courts. So they chose, let us say, two or three outstanding Baha'i lawyers, and there were many lawyers among the Baha'is in Tehran. And they constituted them as, let us say, Baha'i court number one, Baha'i court number two, another group, court number three, number four, number five. So when cases were presented to the local assembly of Tehran, they would automatically be referred to one of these courts. And so if you were a party to a to a case of a difference that you had with somebody else, one of the believers, then you will go to that small group of three Baha'i lawyers who will deal with your case on behalf of the local spiritual assembly. So when we say that a local assembly will become a court, it does not mean that necessarily they have to sit down and judge in every case. They can delegate this responsibility to committees, or what we call subsidiary agencies, that we may call even a court if we want to.
What is the Baha'i view of theocracy in relation to a Baha'i form of governance? How do we as Baha'is, on the basis of our holy writings, envisage the future system of the government of the world? Is it our vision that the universal house of justice will be the world government in the golden age? And if it is so, how can we convey this very delicate subject to young intellectuals who, because of historical reasons, are very sceptical about a theocracy, as it would be under a universal house of justice, which is the supreme political body of the world?
This idea of theocracy, if we say theocracy means krati is the government, theo is God, so it's government by God, democracy is government by the people, and so on and so forth. Autocracy is one, aristocracy is a group. So theocracy is God's government. So if we say that the Baha'i system is a theocracy, it's not wrong. If we say that the Baha'i system is not a theocracy, it's also not wrong. Why? It's because how we use the word theocracy. Theocracy in the general understanding is not something very popular, because it has a whole system of professional clergy as part and parcel of that theocracy. The Holy Roman Empire, with its seat in Rome, was a theocracy. But it had a whole system of bishops and archbishops and cardinals and whatnot, and still does. So this we do not have. So from that point of view, we are not a theocracy in the sense that it is understood in that sense. However, in the theoretical sense, in the general sense of the term, it is a theocracy, because it has been founded by God, by the manifestation of God. It has been further interpreted by two successors, Abdul Baha and Shoghi Effendi, both authorized. And therefore, this system, it is attributed to God. From that point of view, it is correct. But we don't have all the appendages, the accessories that which usually accompany these theocracies.
These are some questions related to the Golden Age. Will the beginning of the Golden Age coincide with the Most Great Peace? Is the Golden Age still part of the dispensation of Baha'u'llah? And on page 7, is the stage of suffusion linked to the greater peace, the Sulh Akbar, as a result of the spiritualization of the masses?
You could confused me by putting all these things.
Well, we can leave the last one. It's just the first two. The first, yes. Will the beginning of the Golden Age coincide with the Most Great Peace? Is the Golden Age still part of the dispensation of Baha'u'llah?
The Golden Age is, of course, part of the dispensation of Baha'u'llah. I'm surprised that this question has been asked. On the other thing, what is it now?
It's the very first one. Will the beginning of the Golden Age coincide with the Most Great Peace?
If
you look at it, you see
when you read all these things together, I'm all confused.
I'm going in accordance to number three. First one.
Yes, the beginning of the Golden Age will coincide with the Most Great Peace, period. Yes, that understanding is correct. The Most Great Peace and the Golden Age are together. Yes.
Why is the formative age also called the age of frustration in the world?
Shoghi Effendi uses this term, the age of frustration, and it is mostly applicable to the age, to the formative age. But when you read his exact words about the age of frustration, you see that he is saying that even before the beginning of the formative age, with the beginning of the First World War, the age of frustration began. You see, Shoghi Effendi attached a great deal of importance to the First World War. Again, in God Passes By, he points out that the First World War was the first stage in the convulsions and the commotions that Baha'u'llah predicted. Remember, he was writing this in God Passes By in 1944, when the Second World War was on. The Second World War was the second stage in the convulsions and the derangement of the equilibrium of the world that Baha'u'llah had predicted. Now, whether there will be a third stage, a third world conflict, no one can 100% say. But in Shoghi Effendi's letters, I must say that after the end of the Second World War, there is a letter from Shoghi Effendi in which he says that he sees reasons that there may well be a third world conflict. That is in print in Citadel of Faith. So these are the periods that Baha'u'llah had in mind, and it is more specialized for the formative age, but it actually began during the heroic age with the First World War in 1914, that age of frustration, when the humanity realizes that what it thought it could achieve, it cannot achieve. That its hopes have been completely, there's disappointment, there's frustration about the aspirations that humanity had for happiness and welfare.
What in your opinion will the next plan be like?
I don't know. Nobody knows. I did refer to the next plan, but if you remember the House of Justice, when at the beginning of the first year, at the beginning of the five-year plan, they wrote a letter in which they said that they see a period of 20 years ahead, from the year 2001 till the year 2021. They see this period as a period when we should be moving forward in anticipation of the 100th anniversary of the inception of the formative age of the faith. the 100th anniversary of the passing of Abdu'l-Bahá. So they are thinking in terms of a series of plans from 2001 till 2021. The 5-year plan is the first, and it's going to be followed by several other plans. But what the specific goal of the second plan will be, the one to follow the 5-year plan, only the House of Justice today knows. But because they have said that the 5-year plan has been formulated in anticipation of the advancement of the entry by troops process. There is no doubt, as I told you in one of my comments yesterday, that this new plan will be very closely associated with this stage of entry by troops that Shoghi Effendi speaks about and that Baha'u'llah anticipated in his tablet to Nasreddin Shah.
In the Kitab al-Aqdas, we find the rulers of America being addressed with the words, "Take ye advantage of the day of God." Does this refer to the opportunities enjoined upon them by the Master in the Divine Plan?
I doubt very much that this is the case. I think when Baha'u'llah is saying, "Take ye advantage of the day of God," the day of God here is, as I told you before, the word day of God has two meanings. One is the ministry of the manifestation himself, and one is his dispensation. That means either the 39 years of his ministry or the 1,000 years of his dispensation. This could mean both, but I think it means the second. It means the dispensation. Take ye advantage of this particular special dispensation. That means turn your hearts and minds to the cause of God. This is what it means.
What happened to the tablets of the Divine Plan? They haven't been heard of in terms of executing them for ages. We've been in their second epoch for a long time. Are they somehow on hold? What are the features of the second epoch?
Yeah, I think here we are talking about that sketch where we show that the first, the tablets of the Divine Plan were written in 1916-17. They were kept in abeyance for 20 years, nothing happened. And then in 1937, the first epoch of the tablets of the Divine Plan began. And now he himself said that in 1963, the first epoch will end. So after 1963, the House of Justice now has to decide when the second epoch of the tablets of the Divine Plan will end. And it has not yet decided. But I think that if you reread this question of diffusion and penetration and suffusion, it has to do with that particular letter of Shoghi Effendi, which I am sure the House of Justice will refer to this passage in their decision, or will be considering this passage in their consultations about when to end this epoch. Whatever they say, whatever they decide, is of God, and we will welcome it with heart and soul.
Could you summarize the essential character of the first four epochs of this age?
You know, this thing we discussed quite often. Briefly, the first epoch of the formative age, as you know, ended with the first 7-year plan. Therefore, the second epoch started when the entire Baha'i world now was boiling, was active in teaching plants. This is why it was a new thing in the entire Baha'i world. The end of the second epoch of the formative age was fixed by Shoghi Effendi himself before he passed away. Why? Because he knew that was the time when the Universal House of Justice will be formed. So the administrative order will have its dome. So it was the logical thing to do, to have a new epoch. The epoch after that, the third epoch, was announced by the House of Justice. Why? As I explained to you, it was because in 1986, which was the end of the third epoch, the House of Justice said, until now, all national goals have been given to national assemblies from the World Center, from whether the time of Shoghi Effendi or the Universal House of Justice. However, from now on, from 1986 onwards, goals have to be adopted by national assemblies themselves in consultation with the councillors. This was a new stage of development for this process of maturation of national assemblies. The House of Justice decided that this had to be a new epoch. The fact that in 2001 they started again another epoch was because of the what we know, we are so familiar with now, that we did not have before. Teaching institutes, study circles, clusters. In many countries we have regional councils now that we did not have before, which was another feature of this new epoch. So all these things combined, the House of Justice felt that it was the time to start a new epoch. Now this will, of course, will continue. How long, we do not know. It may be till 2021. But this is only a guess.
Why did Shoghi Effendi, in his letter of April 1946, announcing the launch of a second seven-year plan, state that there would be 3 years of respite following this plan and preceding the third seven-year plan, and then replace this with the 10-year crusade?
No one can read the mind of Shoghi Effendi. But Shoghi Effendi, this is not the first time that he has done a thing like this. The British National Assembly started their six-year plan in 1944, and they ended it 6 years later in 1950, and they thought now Shoghi Effendi was very pleased with them, they can relax. As soon as they've had this feeling that they can rest now and have a respite, Shoghi Effendi said, only 1 year. And immediately after that, he gave them a two-year plan to go to Africa and open Africa. So, you see, he did the same thing with India. India also finished its first teaching plan. He immediately urged them to have another one, although they were thinking they were going to have a respite. Now, why Shoghi Effendi did this with the American community? That means, as they were launching the second seven-year plan, he tells them, carry out the second seven-year plan. Upon its success will depend the third seven-year plan. But this third seven-year plan, he wanted that the third will end in 1953, which was the very year, 1963, which was the very year that the 10-year crusade ended. You see, so he told them a third step, because they were used to this idea of seven-year plan. But just about 2.5 years before the end of this second seven-year plan, he told them, no respite. We're going to have, instead of a seven-year plan, not only for you, but for the entire Baha'i world, we are going to have a 10-year plan. So we'll have to scrap the 3-year period of respite.
Okay. Mr. Nachtavani said that after the two points in time coincide, i.e. the minor and the major plan come together, there will be a turning towards the faith and there will be mass conversion. The 5-year plan now is to prepare for mass conversion. If I am right, does that mean the coinciding point is actually near?
Of course, you know by now, because of maybe this question was written before, that the 5-year plan is not to prepare for mass conversion, it is to prepare for entry by troops, which is a different situation than mass conversion. If individual conversion is one at a time, two at a time, 10 at a time, 40 at a time, this is individual conversion. Mass entry by troops, Shoghi Effendi makes particular reference to Christianity. He says that Constantine arose to champion the Christian faith when he saw that one-fifth of his Roman Empire had become Christian. One-fifth is 20%. So it should be around 20% is what possibly what is expected of the Baha'i world for this stage of entry by troops. And then mass conversion is of course far more than 20%. It goes between 80%, 90%, 95%. That is when mass conversion will take place, which is mysterious, which is unexpected, which is divinely propelled and divinely executed. Okay.
The next question has been already answered by the people who kindly typed up the questions. The question is, the Bab means gate. Why is that if he's the starting point of the new era? Answer by Shoghi Effendi, God Passes By, page 100.
So do you mean to say I should not answer it?
No, I'm saying they
put
that.
Well, just read to me the question, please.
Why is it that if he's the starting... Why is he called the gate if he's the starting point of a new era? This is on the top of page 74.
Here. Well, why is it that What is it?
Bab means gate.
Yes.
Why is that if he is the starting point of the new era?
What's wrong with that? The Bab means gate, of course. It means that he is a gate to Baha'u'llah. Okay? What's wrong in his being a gate to other things as well? Alright, he's the gate to a new whatever it is, a new era. So you see, let me just give you this picture. You have the Adamic cycle. It begins 6,000 years ago. Adamic cycle comes here. At the confluence of these two cycles stands one man, the Bab. This is the position of the Bab. He is at the confluence of this. This is not called the Babi dispense, the Babi cycle, nor is it called the Babi dispensation. It is the Baha'i cycle and the Baha'i dispensation. But he is right here at this confluence. You see? Now, he is 25 years old. And then this thing begins. Right? Now we come to the dispensation itself. It's not part of the question, but I'm trying to explain it to you so that it becomes clear. The Baha'i dispensation now begins. Right? It begins, we've got the heroic age, including the Bab himself, Baha'u'llah and Abdullah. Comes the end of the heroic age, 1921. Okay? There is a confluence here. There is a new formative age now. At this confluence, there is one man standing. It's Shoghi Effendi. He's at this confluence. He is opening now a new formative age. And this formative age is going to continue after these 36 years of his ministry into the stretches of time ahead, and you have the Universal House of Justice. And then it goes into the Golden Age, and then later on into a new dispensation. So here is the Bab now at this confluence. He is a gate, yes, he is a gate to Baha'u'llah, but he is also a gate for this new era, for this new dispensation. But as he is only, not only a manifestation of God, but he is also a herald to Baha'u'llah, this is why we call this the Baha'i cycle, because the supreme manifestation is Baha'u'llah, and the Bab is under the shadow of Baha'u'llah. Shoghi Effendi used to repeat this, that the shrine of the Bab on Mount Carmel is under the shadow of the shrine of Baha'u'llah. He used to tell the pilgrims, and he wrote it in his letters, that future kings, when they come, they will first visit the shrine of Baha'u'llah and then come and visit the shrine of the Bab. Because the shrine of the Bab is under the shadow of the shrine of Baha'u'llah.
Okay. You've just answered the next question, why is it called the Baha'i era instead of the Babi era?
Okay.
Referring to the British edition of the dispensation by Shoghi Effendi, pages 27 and 28, how do the statements of Baha'u'llah on his apprehension and fears for what the one after him shall suffer, and of the Bab on the process of rise and setting of the Sun of Truth that will have no end, harmonize with the concept of, quote, the day which shall not be followed by night?
Take the next question as well.
The next question you've already, it's gone into the free will and predestination. You told me to leave it for the rest.
No, read it here, it's connected.
If the Universal House of Justice will announce the coming of the future manifestation of God, how will humanity react according to the principle of the purity of heart? Isn't this the principle that always distinguished the righteous from the wayward?
All right. The question of the future manifestation of God, friends, whatever I have said has always been tentative, because I'm giving you my personal opinion. No one really knows how it's going to happen, when it's going to happen, under what conditions it will happen. When Baha'u'llah says that he has fears and apprehensions, it means to me that there will certainly be opposition, because it is true, Baha'u'llah says so in the Kitab-e-Iran, that all manifestations of God will face opposition. But when I commented on this point by saying that the Universal House of Justice, Shoghi Effendi used to say, has the duty of recognizing the next manifestation and introducing the next manifestation of God, that the degree of opposition will be far less than before. This is the thing that we have heard from the Guardian. There will be opposition, but not to the same degree, not with the same intensity. All right. Now, there is a tablet revealed by Baha'u'llah, which shows you how difficult it is to visualize the conditions under which the new manifestation will appear. He says, till now, the proof of the validity of the claim of the manifestations of God has always been the verses that they have revealed, the words that they have revealed. In other words, the revealed word, the creative word, has always been the proof. However, the proof of the next manifestation will be something else. Now, it is impossible for us human beings, with our finite minds, to visualize how this is going to be, or what it is going to be. So, this is why we do not know. This is what I told you about the degree or the intensity of opposition becoming less is something that I told you we heard several times from pilgrims who asked this question, put this question to Shoghi Effendi. On the question of the covenant, this day shall not be followed by night has two meanings. One meaning is the covenant. And Shoghi Effendi has attached this meaning to this, to these words revealed by Baha'u'llah, to the covenant in God Passes By. If you refer to the index of the book, or you read the book carefully, or go back to the chapter that has to do with the covenant and Abdul Baha, you will see that I may have given a reference in my notes, I don't know, that this day that shall not be followed by night applies to the covenant. In other words, after the passing of Abdul Baha'u'llah, because there is a written covenant, then it did not happen as it happened in Christianity or happened in Islam, that there were divisions. In Islam there were Sunni and there was Shia and all this, because there was nothing in writing. But he says, because there is this in writing, that the cause of God is going to be united, remain united. For example, I think it is either in the Old Testament or the New Testament. My memory does not help me here, but it is certainly in the Bible, that when speaking about the future, we have a reference to the fact that the moon on that day will have the radiance and the brilliance of the sun. Now, the moon is referring to Abdul Baha. Shoghi Effendi describes the station of Abdul Baha as the moon of the Baha'i dispensation. Baha'u'llah is the sun, and Abdul Baha is the moon. And the moon, according to this prophecy, will have the brilliance of the sun, because it is Abdul Baha, the mystery of God, who has the perfections of the manifestation of God. In fact, in one of his tablets, Baha'u'llah refers to Abdul Baha as the sun, S-U-N. It is the tablet to Beirut, the land of Ba. That tablet, you find that Baha'u'llah is referring to Abdul Baha as occupying the station of the sun, S-U-N. In other words, he is the moon, but so brilliant is he, so radiant, so luminous is he, that he has the brilliance and the light of the sun shining in him. So this is the distinction of this dispensation. Now, the same text, which is the day shall, this is the day that will not be followed by night, again in God Passes By, he has quoted in another place, in an earlier page, in a paragraph where he is referring to the glory of the dispensation of Baha'u'llah. And that's the time where he refers to the day of Baha'u'llah as the springtime, which shall not be followed by autumn. That you realize that he's talking about the dispensation and not just the 39 years. The whole passage there is about the dispensation, the greatness and vastness of the dispensation of Baha'u'llah. He again quotes, "This is the day that shall not be followed by night." When I was on pilgrimage, one day Shoghi Effendi quoted this. "This is a day that shall not be followed by night." And then he clearly said, this applies also to the future manifestations that have to come. So that this dispensation is a special dispensation, which will have light upon light upon light. And it is going to be followed after the formative age. We're going to have the golden age, What will happen after the Golden Age? This is all speculation. As I told you, for example, this tablet of Baha'u'llah about what will be the proof of the next manifestation. And he says it will not be the revelation of verses. It will not be the creative word anymore. What does it mean? I don't know. Nobody knows. This is a mystery. We have to leave these matters, these speculations, and concentrate on today and do our duties, carry out the responsibilities we have today.
There's a question that's very much like that, just one below. Why did the previous revelations of God not have, I suppose they're saying, such a strong written covenant, such as the Baha'i Faith?
Well, probably because God wanted to give this special distinction to Baha'u'llah. I don't know. That's another mystery.
Why do we commonly use the word prophet in connection to our twin manifestations, knowing that technically this does not apply to them, since Muhammad was the last of those beings?
Yeah.
We find this too in Shoghi Effendi's writings, as well as the station of prophethood or their prophetic words when he talks about them.
Well, I can see the problem that the questioner has, but the word prophet, because it has a double meaning, it has a double usage. One is to prophesy, is to be a prophet, and one is a prophet being a prophet of God, being a messenger of God, being sent by God. So this is how it is in English. It's used in English, and it's also used in Persian and in Arabic and in other languages, almost the same way, that a prophet is someone who prophesies and predicts about the future. From that sense, the prophetic era is finished. But from the sense that prophets are also messengers of God, that is continuous, it's progressive also. Yeah.
There's just time for one more before the break.
Yes.
And this last one is again connected to the previous one regarding the day that shall not be followed by night, similar ideas. Since the Universal House of Justice is infallible, it will recognize the next manifestation of God, so since the Baha'is must obey it, they will be told to turn to this future religion. Is this possible? Does this mean that the story of the next religion will differ from all other religions, for which it is very natural to have opposition and martyrs, etc.?
Yes. I think I've covered this point. Basically, I don't know.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nakhchavani. Thank you very much, Bahiyejun. We have our break till 10:15.